Well, no.
Okay. We'll continue with Martin Keegan, speech about DRM.
Not so fast. I just got to name it. Okay, I assume that's everybody. Can I be heard up the back? Okay, right, my name's Martin Keegan. I have a strange ringing in my ear as a result of this. I'm with the Campaign for Digital Rights in the UK. We set ourselves up in 2001 after the arrest of Dmitry Sklyarov, and we concern ourselves primarily with intellectual property issues, most importantly with the EUCD. In fact, my main contribution to the debate on the EUCD was getting the acronym for it wrong. Obviously, there's no U in European Copyright Directive, but that was a mistake I made some time ago, which has become stuck. Anyway, what I want to talk about is the impact of digital rights management systems, as discussed in Robin and Loic's talks earlier, on free software specifically. I'm going to talk for about 20 minutes, so hopefully that'll fit into the time slots that we do have. I'll try to talk slowly, but I've been told that I tend to speed up by someone who's had to listen to me before. I'll also try to talk loudly. Anyway, in the context of these sorts of free software meetings, free software related meetings, appeals are often made to values that people who care about free software share with people who care about freedom more generally, especially freedom within the digital environment. Many of the people who care about intellectual property as it affects the internet will care about privacy and will often be interested in free software, interested in open access to information. So the argument tends to go, well, you care about free software, you must care about freedom, so you'll probably care about the DMCA and, you know, the EUCD or whatever the anti-circumvention law is called in your country. I want to give you a different perspective on this. I want to talk about how digital rights management and its associated laws, such as the DMCA, are a threat specifically to free software. This is not to values shared by the free software community. This is the threat that is posed by DRM to free software itself. Threats that it does not necessarily pose to proprietary software. So, just make sure I have my pieces in the right order. I believe, and I'm going to paint quite a dim picture here, that at some point in the future, most commodity computer hardware will have some sort of DRM chipset or DRM inside it. And I'm going to present, at least rebut, two normal arguments about why this is unlikely to be the case. I think it is likely to be the case. I'm also going to suggest that much of the commodity data which is currently available for free, music, although not legitimately generally, films, but also some other types, will be encapsulated in DRM. I don't think this is a good idea, of course, I just think it's very likely to happen unless something is done. And in fact, I'll move straight on to those points and then I'll talk about how that's going to have an impact on free software, in particular on the usability of free software kernels. I think that ultimately it could render free software basically unusable on the desktop or in day-to-day life. So, we know what digital rights management systems are, I assume. It's a catch-all term for technologies which restrict or aim to restrict, are designed to restrict or inhibit acts that you might want to do in relation to copyrighted material. So, they'll try to restrict your access, use, reproduction, and distribution of information. DRM is technological systems which do this. The copyright law does this, but in a very different way. It's been argued, especially by Robin Gross, that digital rights management systems go further than copyright law, or at least can go further. So, I said that most commodity hardware might come with DRM. There are two things that people will often say, this isn't going to happen, no one will want this stuff, No one would want to have a computer that won't let them rip a DVD, rip a CD. Why would anyone buy such a computer? And I'm going to argue that they mightn't have much of a choice because of, say, network effects, the same sort of reason that people don't have much of a choice about using Microsoft, though we do have a choice. But there really, in practice, is no choice about what networking system you use. Everyone must use TCP/IP, or you're not on the internet, right? But let's say that there was a choice. You know, I have in the store here a DRM PC and a PC that does not have DRM. Why might I actually choose the DRM PC if I am a normal consumer? And the reason that people might, maybe it's priced more cheaply because certain people want you to buy DRM PCs. That's one way that it could be done. And it's known that normal consumers, normal people out there who buy the commodity hardware that Linux runs on, don't have as good an ability to distinguish between different terms and conditions as they do between different prices. People understand prices. They know cheaper is likely to, well, they know what cheaper means. They don't know what this strange rule or restriction means. But let's say that there are two computers, DRM and non-DRM. And a consumer might buy the DRM PC because they have been told that if you do not buy the DRM PC, you will not be able to play the latest music. You will not be able to see the latest films. We know this with choosing between a Linux and a Windows system. You won't, or at least until a few years ago, you would not be able to play the latest films because they were coming out on DVD. Linux could not interoperate properly with the whole of the DVD system. It took some time for the software to do that, to be developed, and that software has a number of legal and economic problems with it. The economic problems tend to stem from the legal problems in that it's banned, therefore it costs a lot more effort to get it. So, where it's a simple choice, what you're really being offered is you can have the content on your PC, the films, the music, or you can have control over your PC. Because the content comes with these restrictions. If you want the content, you've got to buy into DRM, and DRM is going to restrict some of the things you can do with your computer. So it's not ridiculous to say that, oh, there'll just never be DRM hardware out there, we won't have to worry about this problem. Firstly, you know, it's perfectly possible to put DRM into a computer, and people might choose it, especially if the scales are tipped in this way towards DRM by saying, you just won't be able to get at new content. Obviously, content that's already been ripped doesn't come into that decision. But new music, new films, and some other things may only be available in a convenient and legal way on PCs that have DRM. There is another issue, and that is that if there is any benefit to having a DRM PC which involves your ability to communicate with other DRM PCs, then we will see the same sorts of network effects which occur with Microsoft Word, with TCP/IP, with all these standards which have the property that when one or a few people buy into them, everyone wants to buy into them so that they can talk to all their friends or interoperate with all their friends. That's a second reason that DRM might come in. Of course, DRM might already be in the hardware. It may be in your sound card. We don't really know. Anyway, so it is not a ridiculous proposition. In fact, I think it's a very likely proposition that there will be a lot of DRM hardware out there, and free software kernels and free software applications, but particularly the kernels, will have to deal with this issue. Now, more concerning is that I think much of the data that people will want to use with their computers may come to be encapsulated in DRM. There are lots of benefits which flow from the control that DRM offers the creator of some data. If people can be stopped downloading data for free, if it can be made more inconvenient, then they'll be willing to pay, exchange money for the data. That's obvious. That's the main reason that people have been pushing this. But there are other benefits. If you can control absolutely the distribution of music files, the distribution of software, those sorts of things, then you can price discriminate. You can sell to one group at a higher price than to another without the danger, if you want to call it a danger, some people would see it as a great thing, that the person who purchased the cheap copy can sell his or her copy onto the person who purchased the professional edition. So, you know, imagine that you're Microsoft and you've got Word and you've got the professional edition of Word. If you only have one price, then there are a lot of people who can't afford to buy it. They're not going to get Word, which is probably bad if they don't have a word processor, although we might not want them to choose Microsoft's implementation of a word processor. And they don't get the good, you don't get their money. That's bad for both parties. And if you choose a price that's too low, then there are all these rich people out there in companies who give you loads more money. You know, if you set the price at 500 euros or 1,000 euros, they'd still pay. But if you were setting it at 25 euros to catch all the student market, and the market for poor people, then there's a huge amount of revenue you're not getting. So you want to be able to price at lots of different points. If people can buy something and sell it on, if they can distribute it, if you do not have control over distribution, then you make less money. So it's not just about being able to stop you from doing piracy and all those niggly, annoying little things. You can undermine the potential for a lot more new revenue and new business models by having control over the playback devices you use for data. But that's a well-known story. That price discrimination is well-known in the economics literature. We experience it in our daily lives whenever we try to catch an aeroplane. If you don't buy the ticket on time, then you'll be paying a lot more. If they know that you can afford to pay more, they'll find a way of charging you more. And you know those nosy little questions. What is your household income? What you get on websites and places like that? I always tick the highest one possible so that I get a much better quality of spam and junk mail. But but of course they'll offer it me at a much higher price, thinking I can afford it. But anyway, just getting back onto the point. I'm very good at getting sidetracked. The problem with DRM is that there is no limit in principle to the types of data which can be encapsulated in DRM. When we talk DRM, we think audio, we particularly think DVDs and visual streams. But, and I have a list here somewhere of them, it's not just limited to that. Web pages, stock quotes, personal information, health records, your bank details, email, source code, all those things, because they're just a bunch of bits, although bits with a structure, they are, you know, a data type. All of those things can, in principle, be encapsulated in DRM. Now, there are practical reasons why not everything is going to be encapsulated in DRM. The argument, people are not going to want to put up with this. They're not going to put up with this. You know, we say that about DRM PCs, but I've suggested to you they mightn't have a good choice, or the choice may be loaded. When it comes to the sorts of data people will put up with being in DRM, I think maybe your personal email is something that people won't want inside there, though there are one or two benefits to do with privacy. Privacy and copyright are, interestingly, the opposite sides of the same coin in a lot of these things. So what DRM and the laws associated with it do is to lock hardware to data, effectively. And they do this by regulating what you can use to connect the hardware and the data. They want to make sure that the properties of the system you use to connect those two things, you want the data, you have to use the hardware to get at it. The connection, they want to regulate. And the anti-circumvention laws of the DMCA, the EUCD, and equivalent legislation around the world allow the sort of control that you'd need as a matter of law to make this work. They say, and we've been through this several times today, they say you can't circumvent a technological protection system, and more crucially, they say secondary acts related to that cannot be undertaken. You're not allowed to help someone circumvent by providing information under certain laws, or providing devices, whether that's in the form of information, or importing and constructing and selling and offering and making available circumvention devices. What the effect of these things will be is to drive circumvention devices underground. It doesn't matter that they still exist. If a couple of people who know where to look on IRC can get them, you have to keep them out of the hands of the general public. That's enough to make the DRM system work economically. You can't have perfect DRM, we all know that. But, and we say, so we don't have to worry about this sometimes. But really, It's not perfect DRM that's the threat. It's effective DRM that is the threat, and is a threat specifically to free software, because it's actually quite hard to combine the premise of DRM and the premise of freely modifiable and distributable software. DRM basically says the system will control your use of the data, and free software says, but you can modify that and get around any restriction that they decide to put in. And as you can imagine, this is not particularly not something that makes the right holders all that happy. They haven't really started bleating about Linux yet. It's not being called a hacker's tool or some other ghastly epithet, but the ability to get around DRM adds a third choice. You can have the content, you can buy in to the extent that it's any sort of agreement, you can buy in to DRM and have your content, or you can keep control over your 1995 vintage PC. I've just bought a new one precisely because I'm betting against this, but my old PC was from 1995. So you can have an old computer that doesn't have DRM, you can have your content, but there is a third choice, and that's circumvention. Now, circumvention is against the law, and the utility of circumvention does depend on that legal status. The more strongly DRM is implemented, the less useful circumvention becomes, and these laws will effectively, and I mean effectively, not completely, mean that the three choices really are only two. Circumvention is a mirage for the general public, and they're the people who matter. You can't get the tools into their hands to allow them to do things that they are allowed to do, because you'd get the tools into their hands to allow them things that some people think they ought not to be allowed to do. Right. Let's say that you wanted to use a film, a piece of audio, some piece of data, right? It's not limited just to film and audio, with your Linux box. Take Linux as an example. Obviously, FreeBSD, NetBSD, and all the rest have kernels that work in roughly the same way. You can download the source, modify it. It talks to the hardware and to the applications. Though how it talks to the applications is really not all that relevant, because this stuff is going to be in hardware. Doing it in software is a disaster. To some extent, Linux may be categorically incompatible with the control desired and demanded by the content providers. It should be obvious that DRM system implemented in software is going to be susceptible to all manner of attacks if it's in user space. You can ptrace it, you can replace the binary with a symlink, you can do all sorts of things. It's got to be in the kernel, or it's got to be in hardware, or both, or some separate environment like Palladium TCA. I don't know much about Palladium TCA, I just know that it's weird and different. In either case, there are implications for Linux, whether you do it in hardware or in the kernel. Interoperability with DRM hardware or implementation of DRM inside the kernel, both of those are really nasty things to think about, things to consider. In the case of hardware DRM, you've got to have a choice between full functionality and having control over your system, because obviously the point of DRM is to stop you doing certain things. If you want to have complete control over the system, you can't do those things. The DRM vendor, person who produces the DRM device, they're not the content producer, but they're on roughly the same side, though there is an interesting interaction between those two groups that I'm not going to get into. The DRM vendor can impose conditions and restrictions on any driver that your kernel's going to have in it to work with their system. Either they say, well, you don't get the API our hardware unless you sign this agreement, and we'll sue you if you break the agreement. Or you can say, we can't agree to your conditions about not allowing unrestricted playback and basically allowing people to rip CDs and all the rest of it. So we're not going to accept your license. But what happens next is you're in this nasty area where you're talking about circumvention again. You have to reverse engineer the DRM chipset, or however it's implemented. And reverse engineering is one of the things most impinged by anti-circumvention and anti-circumvention device laws. The DRM vendor, or maybe the content provider, depending on how your law works out, in the UK it tends to be the content provider, can use the anti-circumvention laws to threaten you. Say, if you publish that driver, then we're going to sue you. We're going to get you in enormous amounts of trouble, as we saw with the DCSS litigation. So why don't you take a license, or why don't you just not do this at all? What this means in practice is that any user experience of desktop Linux for future content is going to be substandard. Maybe it doesn't have the latest codecs. Maybe it just doesn't play at all. Maybe it's illegal. But all of these, maybe you have to dual boot back into Windows or into Mac OS or something every time you want to play a DVD. Now, that's a normal experience for a lot of people, having to dual boot to use a particular video codec. But what happens when it's basically you have to dual boot to use any sort of data that someone has had an incentive to encapsulate in DRM? You know, maybe the stock quote system or the medical record system or something, there's been an incentive for the people controlling that data to lock it down inside DRM, and their DRM vendor says, no, there's no chance of a Linux driver. There are too many horrible issues with that. That means for the end user that basically they're going to see Linux as a system which just doesn't use a lot of the data out there on the internet, or they're going to see it as a system which is uncertain. You don't know whether in the future a whole type of data that is of value to you is going to be unavailable on Linux, or is going to be only available on Linux in a really substandard and annoying fashion. Think about how the converter for Microsoft Word files doesn't really work brilliantly. It doesn't give you exactly the same experience. Imagine that 10 times worse, or imagine just not being able to play a particular or use a particular piece of data at all. That is the sort of future that is faced. Alternatively, you could implement the DRM system inside the Linux kernel, but I hesitate to say it is the nature of Linux that it is freely modifiable, having read one of Lawrence Lessig's books, reminding me that this is a bad word to use, but it is certainly regarded by everyone as a characteristic of Linux that you can modify the source, you can download the source, you can distribute your changes to the source, removing all that horrible DRM stuff. That's my phone going off, excuse me. And I've slightly lost what I was saying now. Yes, it is. If DRM is implemented in software, you have same or even worse problems. You could choose, well, let's not have Linux as a freely modifiable and freely distributable system anymore. Or, and I'm not suggesting this is a good idea, right? I'm just. Yeah, you're laughing, right, but I suggest to you that you won't be laughing if you actually had to make that choice. And it does look as though it is a choice between breaking the law, having a substandard system, or letting people completely control all the data that you want to use. Pardon? Have I only got 4 minutes left?
No, there is a fourth option.
What's the fourth option?
Changing the law.
That's further down. I'm not on that page yet. No. Okay, so I've now dropped the microphone. I'll put that back in. Right, so Linux is in danger of having a group of people who control data being able to say, you cannot use that data with Linux, FreeBSD, or any freely modifiable and freely distributable system, because freely modifiable and distributable systems will allow people to unlock our content, and we don't want that. So I'm one page down. So many companies have got an incentive to lock stuff down and to lock various different things down, lots of different types of data, right down to the mundane things like web pages, though web pages probably will never be locked down. In principle, there isn't any limit to the types of data you can lock down. And the PC hardware market is susceptible to these forces, network effects, and people choosing DRM hardware, which will have the effect of basically removing the platform that Linux needs to run in a complete and full sense. Unless the law is changed, as I think it should be, to work on the commodity hardware of the future, which I believe will probably be DRM hardware unless something else is done, Linux must either break the law or abandon one of its most valuable characteristics, namely the free modifiability. Otherwise, it will lose the ability to be used in conjunction with lots of different types of data. So I've been talking in tones basically of moral indifference, as though I didn't care about this. I'm just trying to say how the world could be, not what I think it should be. Obviously, I think that the law that removes that extra choice and locks this all down is a dreadful thing. These things have been enacted with almost no consultation with the public. I know I've participated in one of these consultations, and I can tell you with almost no consultation with the public, largely due to supposed treaty obligations. And they are treaty obligations, but those treaty obligations were basically secured by the people who were pushing this just so that people would have to implement the laws. So to say it's treaty obligations is right in a sort of technical sense, but what we've got with these laws is the position where the balance that used to be in copyright law is in danger of being legislated away. The ability to write your own copyright law, so long as you do it in software and hardware, has been handed over to content providers. It used to be, the balance of copyright law used to be held in the hands of democratically accountable legislators and the impartial experts in the judiciary. Now, copyright policy implemented in software or hardware through DRM is going to be written in its details and specifics by one of the stakeholders, namely the content providers, not in a way that will necessarily take into account the interests of the public at large. In a democracy, we have a right to ask why such laws were passed, delegating that decision-making to people who have not got the public's interests at heart. And well, that was the good news part of of the presentation. And now for the bad news. Microsoft wants to use digital rights management to lock out competition to Microsoft Office. This information has come out from Microsoft recently. It's not anything which they will put into writing or say, but it is something that is being considered internally within the company, and some people in the company are prepared to talk about that. I don't know who they are, but the person who's in charge of the campaign for digital rights, I'm only number two in that, has been in contact with someone from Microsoft, and that is something. And it is entirely rational for them to consider doing this. It means they don't have to worry about OpenOffice. They can just turn the Microsoft Word file format, as people have been suggesting they might for a long time, turn it into a technological protection system and say, well, OpenOffice is circumventing a technological protection device which is protecting the copyrighted content in, you know, your Microsoft Word documents. So the systems that hold this law together, the things that hold this system together are the technology and the law. And the effect of the laws is to unbalance the whole policy at the interests at the expense of the interests of the public. The UCD is basically allowing them complete control over the way information is used in our society, but for free software users, it poses a much more direct threat. It threatens the very viability of Linux and other free systems on the desktop in any meaningful sense, that is, the ability to use it in conjunction with everyday data. It is a weakness of the free software community that there's no way of sort of declaring a state of emergency, but an emergency is what I believe the free software community is in. Thanks very much for listening. Are there any questions? I don't know what how much time. Sorry, you should be. Sir. Technically not a question, but go on.
Yes.
Yes.
So, we talked about security last year.
Yes.
It was a panel discussion.
their equivalent of DMCA, which I think is DAA, Digital Agenda Act, or whatever it is, it's not really relevant. They have a special category of person, I believe, who are permitted to carry out circumvention. You can get a license to do that. Now, at the college I went to at Cambridge, it was all, we used to joke that people would have to wear special Linux user armbands when entering the computer center, being at that time strictly only Windows, Mac OS, and Solaris. But basically, what the problem is then is that Linux then becomes just a toy for developers. Well, not a toy, but it becomes something which can never become mainstream, and which will be kept off the desktop. It will not be available to the generality of users, the generality of people in society, but a lot of people who can benefit from what free software has to offer, especially Linux on the desktop. There obviously DRM is never going to be perfect, and that may provide a window in which Linux can survive, but that window is not going to have the general consumer market in there. The consumer market is where the cheap hardware is, right? So it is still a profound social policy to say people who are not going to be computer developers never get to experience Linux.
And that's why
that is the model. Yeah, that's sort of at the back of my mind is the PlayStation. I was about to ask, well, how did you do stuff for the PlayStation?
Yeah.
Since what is implemented?
That DRM is actually implemented in software.
Yeah.
I think it normally works as a trust thing. The handler checks the signature from the bootloader, and the bootloader checks the signature on the kernel, and the kernel checks the signature on the Xbox.
Hear the word
now,
for Lord.
Now, there's an argument being made that some companies could make
For a fee, yes. Yes. But we're getting a long way from freely modifiable and distributable. So we can restrict the argument and say, okay, it's not so much Linux as freely modifiable and redistributed Linux, and I did suggest that when I was talking, and more specifically, the chain as you boot things up is critical here. You may have a separate environment running on the same hardware, which is what this TCP/IP Palladium thing is threatening to do, inside, once you've booted your kernel, which they've designed for you, then you get to control the glibc and you can do whatever you want inside there. But I'd suggest to you that your glibc has got to do read on that data, right? It's not going to, we're not going to rewrite all our applications to pull it out of some specially protected memory. So the DRM properties start to seep all the way down into the applications. We're not saying Linux is going, we're saying fully modified Linux. So. Take-home message here is that DRM and freely modifiable and redistributable software are not very compatible.
For next year's software meeting, there will be a session about goat cheese.
optimists, Lawrence Lessig and Richard Stallman. Inside themselves, if you look at Intel. I'm trying to scare these people. They don't believe it. I went to a Jesuit school when I was very young, so I should probably not respond to that. But so. Any more questions? Any more optimists?